You are listening to the TN Horror Podcast Network. Horror with a sense of humor.
We have had a doozy of a day.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Welcome to the Horror Basement, a Tennessee Horror News production. I'm one of your hosts, Johnny. We got Jim Jam over there producing the shit out of this thing. We got our local horror expert,
Jim Jam here. Yeti. Jim Jam here, trying.
Yeah, what are you doing, Jimmy?
I don't fucking know.
And we're serving up horror all over the land like biscuits and gravy. Yes, we are.
For salmon and cabbage guys. Cheese.
Salmon and cottage, no. Fried salmon and cottage cheese.
Sorry.
So weird. Anyways. No, it probably isn't. But hope everybody's doing well. Hope everybody's safe. Thank you for listening. As always, we're doing these videos. And you can go check it out on YouTube if you like. Jim Jam's cutting them down to segments further on in the week.
Yeah.
Right, Jim Jam?
Yep.
So you can check out the segments of it if you so choose to do. And as always, before we get in any other tea public, we have merch. And if you use Horror Basement Podcast 30, don't tell anyone and don't tell tea public, but you get $30 off your order.
So you know what that means? You order one shirt, it's free. Pay shipping only.
Order a shirt, add the buttons to it. If it's under $30, you pay shipping.
Yep.
Can't beat that.
That's a ball of shipping, too.
You can order three shirts, you get $30 off.
Just whatever you want to do. You can order 10 shirts and still get $30 off.
Yeah.
Fucking A.
You get a pillow, a shirt, a throw.
A fucking mask.
Yeah, math, $30 off.
We got cocaine, we got guns, $30 off.
No, that's a lie. That's total lie. Horror Basement Podcast 30 is the promo code. Please use it. Please help us. Share it with your friends. We got some good signs. If you got a suggestion for a t-shirt design, let us know, because we could throw it up there. I mean, you're not getting any royalties off of it. You ain't making no fucking money off of it. We just put it up there for you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But yeah, we got a fun show. We got some news. We're going to talk. The movie of the week is Blood Quantum, and we're going to talk indigenous people in horror. Correct, Yeti?
Yep.
This was Yeti picked Blood Quantum this week. We got anything else? Nope. We'll just roll into the news because I was thinking... Oh, no. We do have something up. I knew.
Questions.
I knew we had something up.
Yeah.
I don't have a list in front of me because all these news topics. Jim Jam has the guy's name. Who was it, Jim Jam?
Black and White Fright.
Black and White Fright. If you... Someone wants to give you $1 million. What was it? Would you chew teeth for $1 million?
It's a handful of 10 human teeth. Would you eat them for $1 million? You have to chew them a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit? Because, see, that's the key.
Yeah. And I don't... Just make the noise like you're chewing on.
Look, you would need $1 million just to get your teeth fixed. At least I would.
Well, no. He didn't say you had to chew hard.
Yeah, you don't have to. Yeah,
see,
you ain't got to chew
them
hard.
Just I thought you had to eat them.
You don't even have to eat them. No. You got to eat them. Just you ain't got to crunch down on them hard. Just kind of like clank, and then just swallow.
By that, I had to break them up in my mouth.
Yeah,
he said chew them a little bit.
He said chew them a little bit.
Now, here's a better question.
Are these teeth just being pulled out of somebody's mouth?
So, they might have blood on them?
Yeah. Extra flavor.
Ooh.
Meth mouth.
Meth mouth. Oh.
Meth mouth teeth.
$1 million is still a lot of money.
At least they'd break apart easier.
I was about to say that you could actually chew those. Yeah.
Ew,
yeah. Oh, would, you imagine how bad they would taste though?
Would the rot?
That's $1 million.
Would the rot have a bad taste though?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. They have a bad smell at least.
Yeah, well, they do have it. Yeah.
But with $1 million, I could spend $30,000 to get my teeth fixed.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta specify. Is this like somebody who's all grimy and hasn't brushed their teeth in 20 years, or is this regular nice ass white teeth? You know.
That's what I was saying. Old meth mouth teeth.
I wouldn't give a fuck. I'm down. $1 million.
Yeah.
Like tax-free $1 million. I gotta stipulate $1 million tax-free in a fucking duffel bag, small unmarked bills. I ain't none of it going to the government.
This is probably a little too much information, but if somebody's offered to give me $5 million tax-free, I will eat one of either my cat or my pug's shit for $5 million. So yeah, I'd eat.
I thought she was going a totally different route and be like, I would eat one of my animals. What?
Hell no.
The fuck have we gotten off on here?
Like raw or cooked?
Cooked shit? No.
No,
I mean animals.
No.
I'm over here like,
that wouldn't happen.
Shit? Who's cooking shit to eat it? I'm going to boil it for safety.
Yeah.
Deep fried.
I'm going to boil it. I'm gonna boil this shit for safety. Put it in a sous vide. Put it in a bag. Zip. Fucking vacuum.
Hey, put some put some corn dog dough on it and deep fry it.
No. Couldn't happen.
That sounds horrible.
By the way,
I don't know. And the $5 million eating shit. I mean,
yeah, but it's my animals. I know their brand. I know what I'm feeding them. Fine, whatever.
Frisky's canned food.
I mean,
oh Lord!
Just put it in my, no, same stipulations. Put it in your mouth and just a couple of chews. I'd do it for $5 million.
Yeah,
they swallow.
Wouldn't even think about it. I'd swallow it. $5 million. Yeah, I need a dog turd. Be all right. I don't. Let me get that fucking money.
I think you would be all right. I think you'd get worms or some sort of parasite.
Well, I'd have money to pay fucking medical bills.
I'd lose weight then in the process. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, one of them brain parasites.
I think just one little turd, you're going to be okay.
Okay, yeah, anyway, let's move on. Let's move on. We're all eating teeth for $1 million or chewing on them. We done fucked up his question.
Sorry.
Changed it to our way.
We soiled it. We fucking soiled it.
The next question from Alex, what do we think about Kevin Bacon playing Freddy Krueger?
Well, no, I thought we was doing the trailer
is
reaction.
Is that not what it is?
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, we were talking about it.
Yeah, go ahead. We won't do the trailer reaction.
When is Kevin Bacon playing Freddy Krueger?
No, that's the this rumor has been going on a while that Kevin Bacon would play Freddy Krueger, would don the makeup and everything in the glove. And, oh my God, why is my mind going blank? The guy that plays Freddy Krueger.
Oh, Robert England.
Yeah, good God. You just talked about him. Yeah, I know. Fucking just hit me up in the fucking comments. I suck. Said that he would like to see him play Freddy Krueger. And I think this is like a thing that's been going on for years. I remember seeing something about this a long time ago. And it's making its way back around the internet. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's because Kevin Bacon, his body type.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He would fit the body type of Krueger.
Yeah, and he has that fucking rat face, kind of. He's got a very angular features.
He would fit the character.
Yeah.
I don't know
and
how
he can
much
be touch- fucking... He can be menacing. You guys remember Hollow Man?
Yeah.
That dude's got, yeah.
What do we call that movie?
Anyways.
But But do you guys really want to see another Freddy movie?
Fuck no.
I'd watch it. Really
what could they do with Freddy, though? Because, like...
If they did do it, I would like to see a more realistic burn face. I don't feel like that's a realistic look. Even though it's iconic.
Did y'all ever hear about that Nightmare on Elm Street movie that fucking was ruined by Adam Sandler?
Mm-mm.
Real shit. They were pitching a film where it would kind of cover between Freddy Krueger's death and his fucking journey into hell and how he became like went through hell and became this fucking dream demon and came back to Earth and kind of pick up kind of in towards the beginning of the original Nightmare on Elm Street. But they pitched this movie like right after Little Nicky. And it was going to be like the same company. And they were like, you know, we just had Little Nicky that took place largely in hell. And we don't want to tread that same ground over again. You know, we don't want to, you know, muddy the waters with it or whatever. So they shelved it indefinitely.
Wow. Because
Little Nicky was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say that premise actually sounds interesting. I would want to see that done right and scary, not funny. I don't want to see funny Freddy Krueger. I mean, I would want to see, you know, scary and...
Yeah.
And more like serious, I should say.
Yeah, like the first couple... Yeah. I do like the scarier Freddy.
Because that's the thing. Like, if you try to reboot it, then you're trying to start the story over. But then you can't really start the story over, and you can't start it like Halloween did, where they, you know, erased all of them besides the first one. Because the other movies were good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it would be like a prequel, kind of.
Yeah, like, there's just, I don't know how you would continue that story. Truly. Unless, I don't know. Kevin Bacon as Krueger, it wouldn't bother me. I mean,
there are worse choices.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. What do you mean, yes?
I mean, if you get Adam Sandler to do it, that would definitely be worse.
Yeah.
Well, for sure. I mean,
Adam.
I think people would go, though, just to see what Kevin Bacon did for the character. Like, how he changed it, or...
Yeah, and it wouldn't matter how good or bad it was. People would just bitch.
Yeah, I mean, even the remake that came out, people went and watched it, but they still hated it.
I tend to like my horror movies where they don't have to have lead actors, like Tom Cruise in The Mummy. You know, I feel like making it too Hollywood kind of kills it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really
then they
does.
Have to go in a certain direction and everything. I mean, I think there's just so much talent out there that probably doesn't really get a fair chance because you use the same people over and over. So, I don't know. Hollywood has it's got a good crew behind it. You know, I think you can really dig for some good stuff, for some good people, and to kind of fill it.
Well, that's the good thing about horror, though, is a lot of, with the indie horror scene, you get more people brought up into it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? More people can shine through that way and get caught on, catch traction. And speaking of some news, here's something from Bloody Disgusting. Behind the Mask writer and Tucker and Dale director join forces for Netflix's The Hills Have Eyes for You. And as everyone knows, we love Tucker and Dale vs. Evil.
Yay!
Yeah.
One of my favorite films.
Great.
And Behind the Mask is really good, too. I love horror comedies. I didn't name Tucker, just so we're clear. I didn't name him. When I got him, his name was Tucker.
Just a happy accident.
He named him after the hockey player for Toronto Maple Leafs years ago.
Yeah.
No clue. it was Tuxer Tuxedo Cat. That's how he got his name.
I thought it was Tucker the Fucker.
That's what I nicknamed him.
Okay.
But yeah, the woman that named him, she's like, well, he's a Tuxedo Cat, so I named him Tucker. So there you go. Just so we're clear on that. There's not much news on this, but apparently they're going to make this film, and Netflix is getting it. So I'm pretty happy about it. I mean,
we'll check it out.
Yeah. One of the producers says, and this is as much detail as was given, is it's a unique underdog love story with genre-bending scares. Ooh.
Whatever that means.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. When you start proclaiming gender-bending scares, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe people like Yeti and I have seen too much, too.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's genre-bending, and oh, it's a unique love story. It's like, nah, I don't want to fucking... Yeah. I don't need my fucking horror movies to be a goddamn rom-com, too.
Yeah, but I
hey, ain't nothing wrong with a rom-com.
I see Tucker and Dale as kind of a love story, just not a romantic love story. It's two buddies, you know?
Or yeah, I mean, John. You're not wrong.
Some bromance. Yeah, bromance.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are both great fucking movies.
Heck yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'll check it out just because of the pedigree it's got.
Well, and plus it's on Netflix.
Check it out.
Whenever it comes out, it'll be on Netflix. So yeah, it'll be pretty much free.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And Netflix does have put out some like good shit every now and then.
My thing,
like horror comedies, you know, they do all right with those.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be hard because with them attaching, like trying to attach, you know, Behind the Mask and Tucker and Dale to it, can't really compare it to that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, no.
Tucker and Dale was so good, in my opinion, my personal opinion.
Yeah, it was a great fucking movie. And
yeah.
And I mean, Behind the Mask was all right. I liked it well enough, you know.
Yeah, we had that as movie of the week a long time ago. I remember that.
I will say this. I'll recommend a movie if you guys haven't already seen it. It was surprising and so much fun. Especially if you like horror comedies and you like The Omen, Little Evil.
That is a good fucking movie.
Great fucking movie, man.
Yeah.
Great movie. Yes, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it was the evil little kid.
It's just like The Omen, but it's really funny. It's pretty well done, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I started that movie, but I never finished it.
Yeah, it's good.
I looked at it 100 times and was like, nope.
No, you should check it out.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a good time.
Nope. I'm not sure. I don't have the timeline, guys. So I'm just throwing that out there. I don't have the...
Velociraptor.
I'll talk about... are all really short. Again, there's just not that much info. There wasn't that much horror info this week horror news. So, Hellraiser is being rebooted by David Goyer and Sunglass Media Group. They've hired their own writers and directors already, and it will be Ben Collins and Luke Petrovsky, and the director is going to be David Bruckner, who's also known for work on other horror stuff. They're going to stay loyal, but to the original, yet evolve the adaptation of the classic. So that's kind of where they went with that.
That VHS, is that what you said?
Yeah.
No, right now I'm talking about Hellraiser.
Oh, that's not they're doing another one? Another fucking Hellraiser reboot?
Yeah.
I got a different article where Hellraiser remake is rebooting. Okay.
Hold on. I'm tying that all in.
Yeah.
Oh. Look at her. Fancy over here.
Well, I guess in related news, this is almost the same people. So the VHS is making a comeback with a reboot titled VHS 94. And it will be produced by the duo of Ready or Not. and it will have all new stories. And David Bruckner, once again, who directed the segment of the original movie, he's working on the script and will serve as a producer along with Simon Barrett. So the latest reboot is said to be the first in the series to be presented in a single fluid narrative with each section linking up. So
I don't know, because that was kind of the charm of VHS, was all the little segments that really didn't have much to do with each other except for, you know, it was a solid fucking anthology. I love those movies.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, what was it, 2, that had the Lilith chapter?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man, it was so good. I don't know. You know, you're coming in and you're changing the formula, you know, making it a whole thing that all links together and yada yada. It's like, fucking just make a different movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need the VHS name to sell your fucking movie? Is that what it is?
Yep.
You know, I just make a different fucking, if you're going to come in and, I mean, it's not a super original concept. You know, it's you find a collection of tapes and they're all fucked up and some bad shit happens in the wrapper. I mean, it's been done a million times. So mm-hmm. just stay away from the series that's already there. Make your own fucking movie. But no, let's reboot VHS because it totally fucking needs it. I don't know.
We'll see. And then, and also more Clive Barker news, the books of blood stories, they're going to have a new adaptation of those tales, and they're heading to Hulu for Huluweeny celebration in October. So that anthology will premiere in October. And so the plot says that it takes a journey into the uncharted and forbidden territory through 3 tales tangled in space and time. So I don't know. We'll see. Might be interesting.
Books of Blood was good.
Mm-hmm.
I got on a kick like years and years and years ago and read a bunch of Clive Barker. And Books of Blood was really good. So, I'm definitely going to give this a shot. It'll be I can almost guarantee it'll be better than the fucking End of the Dark series that they tried to do.
Oh, yeah. I was really bummed by those.
Yeah, they all sucked.
I was looking forward to them when they announced it, and then it was like, then I watched a couple of them, and I was like, yeah, not really into these.
Yeah. Was too. I was so excited. How cool to have a movie each month, and yeah, it's. I feel like maybe the timelines are really short, but I felt like a lot of them, the stories were kind of weak.
And I get it, like. You give directors a chance to make movies, you know what I'm saying? Wouldn't normally get to and all, but
absolutely.
I really thought that's what I was excited about was it was, you know, a dozen directors. You know, you're giving them their crack and they're getting a wide audience, you know what I'm saying? Because Hulu's, you know, it's got plenty of fucking eyes on it, and definitely, you know, when they start, I think they started in October. So, I mean, you got everybody watching horror movies then, and mm-hmm. you get them hooked, and it sounded like a really good premise, but, like, man, I think after the Christmas one, I just stopped watching them, because the Christmas one was so fucking dumb.
Yeah, we watched that one where the family was out in the middle of nowhere.
That was, like, I think Father's Day one.
Yeah. And the mother had died, and the little kids or something were after them. We had it as movie of the week.
I remember that.
I think the dad took the kids camping, wasn't it?
Yeah. And they broke down, and the entities wanted to take the children. And
it was fucking cliche after cliche after cliche.
Yeah, the daughter was a typical teenager on her phone, mad at dad because the mom had died. And that whole, like you said, cliche. But like the one guy in here says he wonders why this Book of Blood wasn't a series instead of a movie. You know what I'm saying? Like Hulu could do a series of short stories, but they probably couldn't do it well. So that might be why.
Now, are they going to be animated or is it going to be live action type?
I think they're gonna be live action. I didn't see anything about animation, but
okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure. I think that'd be interesting animation, especially with Clive Barker's artwork.
Yeah, I was thinking that, like, I've said for a long time that the new reboot of Hellraiser kind of made me think of it too. The final kind of book in that whole saga is called The Scarlet Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking incredible, and I'd love to see it turned into a movie, but it would have to be animated. There's no way you could do that live action and do it justice.
Yeah.
I think if you did, did you guys see the Castlevania series that they did on Netflix?
It's on my list. I still haven't had a chance to watch it.
No, I haven't seen it.
I think if they did that art style, though.
You think, I was thinking either that art style, which is what you would expect.
Yeah.
Or even like what they use in video games, because I love the interludes, they look so real that would be a really neat way to even do it. I think that would, I think it would really merge the best of both worlds in a sense.
Yeah.
For people who are like, I don't really want to watch like an anime type style or something. But yet those are so realistic that I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah, like a motion capture.
I wonder what the price difference is on them.
Probably a lot.
I don't know.
We'll move forward with the Velocipastor.
Oh, man.
This is Yeti scene.
I am so glad this movie's getting sequels. I fucking I fucking love this movie so much. It could have been sleazier. Personally, I think it could have been sleazier. But outside of that was like my only complaint for the whole movie.
I knew I was in for a trip because I watched it the other day after I saw this, and you said, "Oh, it's good. You got to watch it." And right away, the very first scene where the priest steps out and they show his parents, and then all of a sudden they get killed, and it does the effects, like insert effects here.
Yes.
I left my ass off. I'm like, "Oh, here we go."
Yeah, it's definitely Velocipastor is so fucking fun.
Well, it's getting two big budget sequels, and when anything says that it's getting two big budget sequels, and you haven't made the second film yet,
so who's backing this then?
The budget is only 1.5 to 2 million.
You don't know if it's going to, like, the sequel could just bomb. You know what I'm saying?
They already have it. So they talked about the next sequel, which is going to be called Outback Dracula, set in the land down under. It takes place in 1880 Australia, where a psychic lesbian school teacher teams up with the world's greatest adventurer to find her missing girlfriend and defeat Dracula and his golden army of the undead. Hello. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Fucking A, it does.
So,
I guess if you're a raccoon and all that.
I mean,
I think it sounds like a lot of fun. Because you're not expecting, really, what are you expecting for something like this, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I guess, like you said, it's going to be a $1.5 to $2 million budget. So he's ditching the, as they put it, the spirit of Halloween looking costumes. And gonna go like big budget, or not big budget, but like real deal, try to have really good, nice costumes and features and everything. Which $1.5 to $2 million, you should be able to do a really good film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
definitely.
And especially in horror, and if you go above that, a lot of times they just waste the money.
Yeah, and well, you go above that and you risk getting like studio notes on shit. And
sure. Yeah.
And you get fuckers who don't know what they're doing or don't understand the craft putting their hand in the pie or whatever. So,
well, yeah. I like that it's going to take place in the 1880s. That's kind of fun. I'm always a fan of period pieces.
Yeah. This should be fun. And in Australia, too. Australia's just fucking cool.
Yeah.
And there's just... I hope there's emus in it. I really do.
Say like, emus?
The emu war.
Oh.
You guys have ever heard of the emu war? Okay, well, like, I don't remember when it was, but it was you know, a long time ago in Australia, they had a bunch of fucking emus. Like, these big-ass, like, birds are almost like ostriches. They're just overrun with the fuckers. So they called in the Australian military to come and, like, fight a war against these fucking emus, and they lost. They were getting fucked up by these birds.
You making this shit up again, Yeti?
Absolutely not. That is 100% true history.
That's justifiable versus, you know, like a little Frenchie dog and being mauled and killed by a Frenchie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
We're a dingo.
A dingo?
Yeah, they ate
dingoes took my baby.
Well, the last two stories, I have to say, I'm personally very excited about, so.
Which two stories do you have?
What do we got?
George Romero.
Okay, that's what I was about to go to.
Yes.
George A. Romero's long-lost film, The Amusement Park, is being sold by Yellow Veil Pictures. So this film has been 46 years after it was completed. The George A. Romero Foundation restored it to 4K.
Beautiful.
And they're going to release it, but it has nothing to do with horror, from what I read. But it's scary. They said that it's probably one of the scariest films he made because of the content of it.
I was going to say, probably the commentary that he has. Well, his movies
are... It's about ageism and elder abuse.
Yeah, it's ageism and elder abuse and just seeing someone, you know, get older and how they're treated.
Well, for those of us who are, you know, getting older, it is scary.
It says the amusement park stars... Lincoln Mazzell is an elderly man who finds himself disoriented and increasingly isolated as the pains, tragedies, and humiliations of aging in America are manifested through roller coasters and chaotic crowds. It sounds like it'd be fucking dark.
The other thing is, it's 1973, which is the 70s are my favorite era for horror. So I love the look, the feel. I'm sure it's going to feel even raw, you know.
Oh, yeah. So
I'm really excited to see this movie.
And here's another fact. The film was originally commissioned by the Lutheran Society to raise awareness about ageism and elder abuse. And to me, that's funny with, you know, these people hiring filmmakers to be like, we need you to make a propaganda piece. Put it in a film. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
George is probably like, I just want to fund my movie.
Yeah
exactly. And, like, you paying me? Okay.
And then the Lutherans saw what it was, and they're like, yeah, no. We're not putting this out.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of...
nobody's seen it.
There's some old, like, Christian propaganda movies that are fucking... Like, man, I can't remember the name of the pastor, and he's got, there's like this crazy fucking evangelical pastor, and the guy he's got directing his films is an exploitation director from the early 70s, and it's movies like, if running tires you, what will horsemen do? Or if footmen tire you, what will horses do? And it's about the communist anti-Christian takeover of America. And it's just fucking communists coming in and gunning down, like, just streets full of children and shit.
Yeah, it's all propaganda stuff.
Oh, like, man, it's fucking nuts.
Everybody, yeah.
But I mean, that's interesting. It'd be cool to see that in film. It'd be really cool to see it in like in a smaller theater, not like, you know what I'm saying, like an AMC, but
yeah,
like a local one, like Full Moon.
Full Moon Cineplex.
Yeah, like for us, Full Moon Cineplex or somewhere like Yeti, the one place.
Like Central Cinema.
Yeah, you know.
The Chicago Music Box would be perfect. And I'm sure they will show it because it's more art house.
Yeah, or like Alamo Draft House or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere like that. Where, and speaking of that, the cinemas are opening back up. Theaters are opening back up July the 10th for Regal here, and at least what I got was July the 10th. And AMC's opening up a week after. So, Unhinged will be the first movie shown at Regal.
Hmm.
That's starring Russell Crowe, and he is. It's a road rage movie.
Hell yeah.
So I'll be going and watching that. If anybody cares. Nobody cares? Okay, fuck y'all.
I haven't heard of it, sorry.
I hadn't either until they sent me the email, and I was like, well, what's going to be showing? Oh, okay. Well, that's the only movie showing. Therefore, I'll have to go watch that movie. You know what I mean? Like, you ain't really got an option.
Yeah, fuck it.
Tucker, stop. Sorry. He's in the sink.
He likes to drink the water. My cats do that.
No, there's a plate in there. He's messing. He's goofing off.
He's
not up this late. This is what it is. No, he's not hungry.
Don't yell at me. He is too.
He's not hungry. He's got dry food over there. Are we moving? Bruce Campbell working versus Frankenstein film made. This is from iHorror. So, you know more about this, Angela, than I do.
Well, right now, Bruce, one of his partners, Mike Richardson, they're going to start with a graphic novel first and hope that that catches on of Bruce versus Frankenstein. And then Bruce has said he's going to adapt the screenplay. And so they're going to try selling a number of the projects. And since his friend Mike Richardson has, I should say, sold a lot of projects to Netflix, that's where they're going to start. So they're hoping that they'll create a buzz with the graphic novels, and then they can turn it into something, and somebody will buy it. And I think it's brilliant, and I'm absolutely down for it.
What do graphic novels sell for nowadays? Like $3?
What's that?
A graphic novel, do them sell for like $2.95 or is it like $3.95?
No, graphic novel is like a full one. They're $25 to $35.
Oh. Yeah, just depending. Like
you're thinking like a comic book is like a single issue. A graphic novel could contain a whole series or a whole big story. They're great. That's what I collect, are graphic novels.
Yeah, I have a hard time collecting comic books because you have to wait. You know what I'm saying? Like you're waiting for each issue
to come
out.
That's what's great about the graphic novel.
I have a hard time with that. Yeah, I'd rather do a graphic novel. Yeah.
What is it? Ibn Press?
Do what?
Yeah. There's a company called like Ibn Press or Aben Press. It's EIBON. They do a bunch of like horror comics and graphic novels and shit. They got some pretty good. They got some great shit with some decent prices. Why?
Everyone's got cats that are just like, why are you doing this so late?
He always sounds so sad.
Lucas Two Legs is out cold, sleeping behind me. So, and my other cats are in bed sleeping.
What?
Yeah, this is a work night for me, and usually I'm in bed by now. So Tucker's not usually up this late. He's not up with me this late. I can tell you that. I don't know what he's fall asleep.
He's just trying to eat some leftovers, and his dad's yelling at him for it.
Yeah. What's good enough
for his dad isn't good enough for Tucker, apparently.
Well, and cat food. He gets one whole can of cat food, and he has dry food.
Do you
want to
eat cat food if you could have leftover yummy human food?
Oh, he wouldn't eat what I have.
One of my cats is obsessed with French fries. He'll steal a French fries.
He ate French fries, but he likes pork rinds.
We have
pork rinds, but he does not like French fries. I tried.
We have one that eats pretzels. He fucking loves pretzels.
I don't even like pretzels.
Like, if you open a chip bag, he could be across the room asleep. If you open a chip bag, he is up and fucking headed your direction.
I had a cat and Persian, a white Persian, and I had sweet and sour chicken. And I set my plate down. I went to the kitchen, and I came back and it was completely gone. And her face was all orange.
Oh my god!
I'm like, wow. Price and all.
Damn.
Mhm. She did me like that.
He likes Doritos.
I do want to add before we move on from the Bruce versus Frankenstein.
Yeah.
That he said it would be the Expendables of horror.
Yes. Oh yeah, that was the line that fucking killed me.
Yes. Oh god.
Yeah.
That was the line that killed
Death House all over again.
Yeah. What was the other movie that become that was trying to do the Expendables of horror? Oh fuck! What was that other movie? It was like
it was a low budget movie.
Trying to use the same tagline. Like,
and they didn't have hardly anybody in it.
Yeah, because when Death House came out and it was like the Expendables of horror, and everybody was like, "Well, why ain't Freddy Krueger in this? And why ain't Jason in this?" That's not what the fucking Expendables was. You didn't see Rambo. Jason Statham's character from fucking
Crank.
What's that other movie?
The Transporter?
Yeah, The Transporter in that motherfucker. It just killed me seeing shit like that. Angela, did you watch that movie?
What movie?
Death House.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen that?
Maybe I had.
You would remember it.
Kane Hodder stars
in it. So many horror movies. Yes, I think I did see it.
Netflix.
I will say the experience of watching that movie was better than watching the movie.
Watching a movie with Kane Hodder, that was really fucking fun. And then sitting there and talking to him afterwards was really awesome. And Kane Hodder did a great job in the movie, but the story sucked.
Yeah.
We've talked about that way too much over the years, but it needs to be talked about because they fucked it up.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
they fucking soiled it.
Me and Yeti actually have a poster signed by Kane Hodder.
I mean, you have a killer crew.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody that you could possibly love is in it. Kane Hodder, Dee Wallace, Michael Berryman, Tony Todd, Adriana Carboa, Barbara Crampton, Sid Haig.
Bill Moseley.
Jesus. Bill Moseley. Yeah.
But some of them are only in it for like seconds.
2 seconds.
Yeah.
I know I've seen this. I have to watch it again. Even Lloyd Kaufman. That's great. Sean Whalen. Man. I'm going to have to double check and see if I've seen this.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. We had a little series going. We was trying to interview all the actors in it, and we fell short quite a bit.
Sure. Well, we fell short on Kane.
No, we didn't. No, there's quite a few more that we didn't get.
Anyways, let's move on past that fucking movie.
Yeah.
We wasted so much time on that movie. Because we thought it was going to be really good, and everybody thought it was going to be really good, and then it came out.
Then it came out, yeah.
And then,
you guys told me. It's on Netflix, so.
Oh, yeah. There you go. It's free.
I'll see if I saw it.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Let's move into the topics. indigenous people in horror? Indigenous filmmakers?
Yeah. It's really fucking, okay, so, representation, I feel like representation is important, not to the detriment of creativity. I'm not for, like, forced diversity or anything, but it's always nice to see, somebody who looks like you on screen, you know what I'm saying? Oh, it's always nice to see people who are from your culture, who are either behind the camera or in front of the camera, or given a positive light to things. And there's a lot of like Indiansploitation in horror, from Old Chief Woodenhead, from the Creepshow. I think it's Creepshow 2.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
with the fucking, yeah, which, I mean, I liked that. I dug the fuck out of it. And then, you know, like with Poltergeist, there's like the Indian burial ground, as if this entire fucking country is not an Indian burial ground. And even in like Pet Sematary, it's kind of alluded to, with the Mi'kmaq tribe and the Wendigo and all that good shit. Which the movie of the week, the director is actually Mi'kmaq, so that kind of lines up a little bit. But it's, mm-hmm. It's so rare to see positive representation of Native Americans.
Well, I mean, I don't even think it's so much positive. It's like you were saying, the stereotypes from white people, you know?
Yeah.
As far as, oh, well, he's one with the land and he must have wisdom. I think
that old noble savage trope, you know?
Yeah, and I think what is so great about actually hearing from a native, you know, an indigenous director from the same tribe, actually, you know, is the honesty that you get, or his version of the honesty. Because one thing that I think that this is one segment of the population who is very strongly not thought of in general at all. I mean, to me, this is probably one culture that has truly been ransacked. I mean, and just devastated. And what's left is a lot of anger, a lot of mental health issues, a lot of substance issues, just a lot. I mean, could you have your culture ripped away from you? And your language and who you are. So there's a lack of identity or not fitting in with your culture versus the current culture, or how do you assimilate? And, you know, it's.
Yeah. And up until like pretty recently, actually, like trying to keep that culture alive, even on a day-to-day basis, not even in a public eye kind of thing, but on a day-to-day basis in your home. I mean, that was fucking hard. Up until, you know, really fucking recently, like in the past, you know, a few decades, they had residential schools where they would take Indian kids, and the whole plan was to kill the Indian and save the child. Mm-hmm. So they would beat them, they'd cut their hair, and they'd beat them when they spoke their language, and they'd beat them when they prayed. And anything that didn't fall in line with this colonialist fucking goddamn filthy Jewish desert wizard, they'd fucking beat him. They beat him to death, and there wasn't anything anybody could do about it because that was just the law. And I mean,
and
even
there was
now,
a lot of rape and abuse and
even now, like especially in, it happens a lot up north, like in Canada, in the northern U.S., like indigenous women are murdered and raped at an astronomical rate, and it's never, like, almost never never investigated. There's Standing Rock Reservation made news a couple years back with the DAPL pipeline and shit, but like in that reservation, I remember when I was in college, one of our assignments was to do flyers to help with the fundraiser for them, because like on that reservation, people are freezing to death in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, up there, it's so cold, and they didn't have heat. You don't have blankets. You don't have fucking heaters. I mean, it's so poor, and it's, and there's, like, systems in place to keep that shit going, but that, I'm getting way off. I'm sorry. But, and that does, it does lead to stuff like Blood Quantum. It's not a super sunshiny image of an indigenous community. It's a real image. That's like, one of my favorite movies of all time is called Smoke Signals. It's not a horror movie, but it's almost like a coming of age story, about a couple of Indian kids, and one's father dies and he has to come to terms with that and stuff. And it's not a rosy picture, but it's a really real picture. It's, based on the book, The Lone Ranger and Tonto, Fist Fight in Heaven by Sherman Alexie, who's a brilliant, indigenous author and like, commentator, or, you know, not like a commentator, but I mean, all of his stuff is commentaries on indigenous life and culture in the current, you know, and you don't see a lot of honesty and you don't see a lot of positivity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think, you know, I think they're dealing with a lot. And I think until that gets addressed, you know, and I'm sure it's a real slap in the face too, to always think, and no offense to Canadians, but you know, it's always, oh, Canadians are such good, kind people, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
You'd be like, bullshit. I have another side of the story.
Yeah, unless
again,
you're First
Nations. I'm overgeneralizing, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's even when you listen to the movie or even the documentary that was done, that he credited, to being a huge influence, the director, I don't have it right in front of me. I just forgot it.
The incident at, Restigouche.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, when the prime minister was like, well, we gave you this land. And she's like, no, this is our land. And you're giving us a piece of it. You know, it's like the audacity, even just sitting there watching it or, you know, and telling them
imagine,
that they're not allowed to fish, you know, and
could
that's
you imagine
their
a reporter standing up to a public figure like that now. You know what I'm saying? Like, talking like the way and being allowed to talk that way to him.
Well, that was the director.
Was that the director, the woman?
Wasn't that the director or was, that
I
was
think so, yeah.
I watched it, but I didn't know who she was. You know what I'm saying?
Because she was
the way that it was cut and edited. But she was just like, you said that our, can't have a culture, you know, without a language or something. It's just like, dude.
Yeah. And it was like,
wow.
It was like, you know, because a lot of treaties are based on these being sovereign nations. You know, so they started talking about their sovereignty, and he was like, well, yeah, you can be sovereign. And up to a point, you have to really look at the definition of sovereignty that's being used. You know, so, I mean, ever since you people came to this country, but no, I mean, it's been fucking 400 something years of oppression. You know what I'm saying? It's still going on. So it comes out in the art. It comes out honestly in the art, and you don't see.
I don't know anything about the Canadian side of it because I don't like the stuff that I've watched on YouTube and the clips and stuff. And, you know, it's here on reservations here in America. And they're poor.
Yeah.
Oh, very much so.
Like, on purpose.
Yeah. And they make it to where they don't have anything. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, there's no jobs. You can't. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's why just alcohol and everything is so rampant.
Yeah.
And
it's like
the
there's
one,
no hope and there's so much abuse. Physical abuse.
I watched one where they were doing metal music. And they had built the stage, and they would have, you know, a group of them would get out there and just play some, like, just really heavy-ass metal music.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, throw a little party together and just it's really interesting to see that, you know, how they get along. And it's just, and it makes sense, like, for directors and people that want to do film that are native. It's just like, well, where are you going to get it? You know what I'm saying? If you live on the reservation, how are you going to, you know, you got to move away to get the funding and to get the contacts. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's a shame. And nothing's changing, though. Nothing's changing for them. It's not getting better.
No, it's definitely not getting any better. There is, I have seen, though, it's like this, there's currently, like, over the past few years, there's this movement of people, like, are like my age and younger, who are digging back into their heritage and trying to bring the culture back, you know? Like, there was a prophecy about after the seventh generation, you know, the fucking, the people of the land coming back and stuff. It was like a Sitting Bull's prophecy or whatever. I'm not super sure right now, but I mean, you see a lot of it, and it's because of that being tamped down for so long, you know, that it's almost a way of a rebellion. And it's also like a betterment of self and a really trying to find your identity, you know?
To me, that way of life, though, to live with the earth and to not abuse it is way fucking better than what's going on now.
Yeah.
That way would have worked out a hell of a lot better than, I mean, capitalism gives you money, you know what I'm saying? But you're sucking the earth dry.
And it's not even just, you know, living with the earth. It's living as a community.
Yeah. Yeah. Taking care of each other, doing what you got to do.
Well, like, even the director even says that he views the earth as a life force.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and we're taking everything out of the middle of it. You know, you're mining the hell out of it. You're pulling stuff out and you're putting it on top. What used to be inside the earth is on top of it. How long do you think this shit's going to last? You know, like it's going to have a negative impact in a way. You know what I'm saying? You can't continue to take the stuff out of the earth and put it on top of it and be like, oh yeah, it's not going to get warmer.
Yeah, it's fine. Totally fine.
You got all this steel and rock out here now that used to be inside out on top. So yeah, it's going to suck in the heat. I mean, that's just part of it, you know, but I don't know.
But as far as like, even just what kind of is messed up to me a little bit, hopefully I'm not talking out of sorts, but even the concept of that literal concept of blood quantum, you know,
it's a very white concept.
It's a very white concept that was enforced by the whites, that, you know, your blood, a fraction of your blood determines if you are qualified as, you know, to be part of this tribe. However, each tribe determines how much of a percentage, you know, what fraction you are. So I almost find it well, could you imagine one have to carry a card to determine if you fit in or not? And then, you know, where like you have the black population, what do they say, that a drop of blood and you can call yourself black? The old adage for that. So with this, you know, it's the tribe determines it, but I almost feel like that's also a way of it's a way of shutting out your members. So that's kind of a confusing thing for me to fully understand.
Well, when it started, it was all about the roles, the Dawes role is what it's called. And you would come in and everybody would come in and register, which is caused a problem with like blood quantum now, because there are a lot of people who didn't go register. Because even though they might have been half, they might have been three quarter, they might have been full bloods, they didn't want to be on that role. They didn't want to be under the fucking eye of the BIA. They didn't want to be under the eye of the government, you know.
Or they weren't even labeled correctly.
Yeah. So you got, I mean, so that's kind of dicked everybody, you know, down, you know, as you go. And I know I'm Western band Cherokee, and not too long ago, they dropped Blood Quantum. Because of the Freeman. Because we would have, it was kind of controversial, but they kicked the Freeman out of the tribes. Because you had blood members of the tribe who were becoming too diluted to receive benefits,
mm-hmm.
to housing, to mods, in certain places like per cap checks and shit. And then you had these descendants of freemen, our slaves, who were still getting the same benefits as full bloods, for forever. So they kicked them out of the tribe because if they were going to have to turn away members of the people, they were going to turn them away too, because there's no way to prove their actual blood quantum. So
that's right. I remember now it being about financial.
And then the Supreme Court stepped in and said you couldn't do that. So then the chief came out and said, well, if we got to keep them in, everybody's in. You know, if you've got ties to the tribe, then you're in. One drop of blood is enough to be in the tribe. I can't speak for other tribes, but that's kind of the politic breakdown on mine, or one of mine. But it's a very white concept that has been kind of adopted.
Yeah. And I can see why it's been adopted, but it's sad that it had to be adopted by the tribes.
Yeah, yeah. It is. I can see it both ways, kind of.
Yeah.
But it's, to me personally, and I'm not like on a board or anything, but I think it's more about, the actual acceptance of your culture and your roots than mm-hmm. it is what's in your fucking veins.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because you could be three quarters of the way there, like three quarter blood, and be a fucking apple and not know shit about your history. So, I mean, some kid who's 164th is about that life, is about the ceremonies and shit. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But should we start talking about the movie now? Or did you have more you wanted to ask?
No, I don't want to get too political. Let's go on with the movie.
All right, yeah. Let's move on to the movie of the week.
Or the movie of the week. Tonight on the movie of the week.
I lost track of the time.
Did you get bit?
This planet we're on is so sick of our shit. That's why the dead keep coming back to life.
You're immune. I'm not. What if my baby isn't either?
Bad. Ninagasi.
I heard that you could cure bites here.
Ain't nobody immune here but us.
One of them could come in here and infect this entire camp.
Behind you!
You wanna live?
Who says we're immune?
A duck jaw looks at Hummo. A wind sui lexico.
Movie of the week, Blood Quantum, from 2019. Yeti chose this movie from director Jeff Barnaby, also the writer of Blood Quantum.
Yeah, I chose this just because it was because it looked like I saw the trailer, I saw the cast. It was a largely indigenous cast. I actually I follow some indigenous like hip hop artists and stuff. Like big shout out to Dreesus Music and fucking Superman. And like they name dropped it. They were like, man, we just saw this. It's fucking amazing, you know. It's so good to see, you know, the representation and stuff. So that kind of made me want to see it. And then the trailer was just fucking dope. So, so it's about the Red Crow Reservation, Mi'kmaq tribe. They're immune to a zombie outbreak. All these the white townies start turning into zombies, and they have to like fortify their ground and try to kind of make decisions between putting up a wall and keeping people out, or being good Samaritans and trying to save the people, you know, the white people.
Let's start off what everyone thought about it. How about that? Jim Jam, what did you think about this movie?
Yeah, I thought it was really well made. Great gore. A lot of good gore.
Fuck.
Great gore.
You know, it's probably going to run for somebody, but a dude gets his fucking dick bit off. So, it's pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah, I was bad.
He was a sleazebag anyways.
Yeah. That dude was a fucking piece of shit. I loved it. I thought it was great.
There's actually no nitpick of the week for me for this movie, so.
Holy shit. Now that's saying something.
Yeah, I loved it. I liked it so much that right after I was done watching it, I watched his very first feature length, The Rhymes for Young Ghouls. And I really dug that one a lot. So it's on Amazon Prime for free if you have the membership. So I strongly recommend watching that one as well. If you like this. Really good. And my favorite gore scene. Oh, I love it when he tosses the zombie out the window and he's hanging by his intestines. And he said they said they had to do that scene over and over and over. He had to keep jumping out the window, the stuntman. It took them, I forget how many hours. I wrote it down somewhere. It was an insane amount of hours to do that one scene.
The acting was good. The effects were good, but I didn't care for it. To me, this film, and 3 out of 4, you know, not everyone's going to like the movie. The representation was great, but the idea wasn't original to me, because World War Z did the same thing, where certain population couldn't catch the virus to become a zombie. But I don't know. But that was just me. Maybe it was the mood that I was in when I was watching the film. But like I say, for every film, you know, form your own opinion on it. You know.
Well, I think it helps to have a little bit of like knowledge behind it too. And I think that's what he was worried about, was something he's like, I got to throw in your face, because I feel like a lot of people don't even know their own history. And he's referring basically to white people.
Yeah.
You know, so the point I think was, in a lot of ways, is that this movie was about the trauma and the grief, and not a single person, but the history of that anger and everything. And then, it's not about the zombies so much. It's once again, the white man and assimilating. That's the fears in the white man, you know, being overtaken by them. And the fish, you know, how and that being where it all started, and tying it in with the drawings too. I thought was really cool.
That
I
like
the little where the earth impregnates the female and, you know, poisons the earth. And I thought that was really cool, the symbolism there.
Yeah. Those little cutaways were really cool.
Yeah.
I think my favorite gore scene was the chainsaw to the head.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really
That
cool.
was fucking rad. That character was just so cool. It was just so few words, you know. 90% of his dialogue was in fucking, it was in his native tongue. Mm-hmm. And he was just there to fuck shit up. You know, it was, I mean, like that little group of, that's another thing I liked about this is it kind of reminded me of movies like, it had kind of a feel in the beginning, especially like the first act kind of felt a little bit like Smoke Signals or like Dance Me Outside. Cause you have this dynamic of, just tribal life, you know, like res life. And you have this, and you're just kind of brought into this community and you see how they interact and how different things are for them in their world and how they interact with the townies and shit, like the white town that butts up against the reservation and stuff. So you really get that. And then after you're kind of in this community, then you start to care, you know, and then it brings in more.
Months. So like the first half is 6 months before all hell breaks loose.
Right.
And I know I always bring this up, but Jeff Barnaby also did the composition and the score, and some of it was done live, like why they were filming and so and everything. And I loved the tone of it. I liked it. It was just kind of eerie and but yet kind of tribal in certain parts. It was just a nice backdrop to setting the mood. And but I did too. I love that first half, really getting to know. I like the relationship. I love the father of the chief, you know, of the police chief and everything, and kind of seeing what's going on and trying to understand the characters at first, you know, and why is Lice all so angry and you know, so.
To me, I know what y'all are saying about what he wanted out of the film, but I've seen all of it before. Like, The relationship between the tribe and the town folk, I've seen it in movies. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't nothing original to me. And honestly, I think I watched part of this movie and I don't remember. because I watched this movie and I'm like, have I not fucking seen this? Because like I was just constantly having the feeling that I had watched this before. And I don't know why, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, I feel like I've seen this part. Like, I feel like I've seen this part. And maybe I turned on Shudder and it was on and I watched part of it. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I caught bits and pieces of it.
I'm starting to wonder because the past couple of movies you said that about.
Well, and it's just, I don't know. Like, to me, the story just didn't enthrall me personally.
Yeah.
Because like, I've seen it before, you know, where, and like, in especially like movies with Native Americans and all that were. But they have shitty relationships with the town folk. That's automatic.
Oh, yeah.
That is fucking automatic. But now, it's not like I hated the movie. You know, I'm not going to say I hated it. It's a good movie. But it didn't, the story to me didn't capture, you know, didn't get inside me and be like, yeah, this is a really good movie. You know what I mean? Because it kind of drug out. I think it lasted a little bit too long.
Yeah, there was times that it could have been shorter. You know, some things could have been cut.
When I seen that it was an hour and a half long, I was like, okay. You know, we'll watch it. No big deal. You know, I'm down.
It felt longer.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, you could have, like, cut back some stuff. And his grandfather in this movie, he's a badass.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
I loved his character.
You don't have to reload a sword.
Yeah, and I really like the characters, but just the story itself altogether just kind of was like, and we'll just get into it. The white people, you know, you always have the group of people that bring in the wrong stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, they brought the bad people in. Well, but we've seen that in movies. You know what I'm saying? Like, where you got the one stupid, naive person that brings in, which they happen to be
the facts.
And it just so happened to be the I can't think of any other names. The son, the cop's son, you know, the pregnant girl that was, yeah, Joseph's girlfriend that's pregnant, who happens to be white. Her dumbass brings everybody in.
Yeah.
You know, but Lysol ultimately just releases them all. He got pissed when he got his dick bit off. He lost his manhood. You know what I'm saying? And he blamed everything on the white people. Which is true. They fucked everything up.
Well,
yeah, I mean, yeah, they did. Lysol's very angry.
He's very angry. I mean, you know, there's something that went on with his mom that we don't know about from an early age. And I think he's just encompassing all the anger. It's not just about him. I think it's just he represents the anger in Indians.
Even when he got arrested, you heard his story, right? You know why he got arrested?
Yeah.
Yes, that was so funny.
That was funny. Like, I know. Because it's like, and to me, it's like, well, they arrested him because he was Native and he had blood on his face. Well, he got the blood on his face.
He wasn't fighting.
No, he wasn't fighting. Well, he wasn't fighting with the person, you know, like fist fighting.
Yeah.
But
so
yeah,
when you
used
to be my age, you've done it on accident 100 times.
But it's like I say, the characters and everything were great in the movie.
Oh, man, the characters. The story was kind of, I mean, I dug it because of, like, the subtext, but
if there was, like, something that I could have read before, you know what I'm saying, to get into the mood, I guess, better, which I shouldn't have to, though, for a film, you know what I'm saying? There shouldn't be a precursor for you to ramp up to a film.
No, it's kind of a... I mean, you know, your subtext is it's just history, you know, for me, you know, personally, because, you know, you have these white people that come in and fucking bring diseases, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, just fucking everybody dies. You know, so, I mean,
that's... Well, I definitely think the story, his first movie, the Rhymes for Young Ghouls, is really good. I think it's a little bit tighter.
That film and then moved on to this one. You know what I'm saying? To get a feel for who he is.
Well, I think what I like about it is he sticks with, you know how I said I like the first half of the movie the best? I feel like he really sticks to that. And the lead character is a female and she's amazing in it. And just love her. And you see the shit she takes. And she can take it and she can give it back. And it's really, it's just a neat character. And they have such a strong female, too, and really hold things together. And she's real smart. And it's just a really good movie. I liked it. Side note, I know that's off topic a little, but.
No.
I think with this movie, my favorite scene was toward the end. And, you know, spoilers, of course, like every other week. Toward the end, where they're all gonna escape because shit's really hit the fan and the fucking zombies have overrun the community and they're gonna get on this boat and go off, and then they all get on the boat except for the grandpa. He's like, I'm not leaving this land again. And he's just him and his fucking katana and like a horde of zombies. And it's just, and then that fucking music hits with that big spirit singing and the drums, and he's just chopping motherfucker. Oh, God damn it. That went so hard. I mean, that was one of the coolest scenes in a movie I've seen in a long time. Just from every aspect, everything really came together and locked right there in that scene. It was so fucking good. I also really like the ending. It was kind of bleak and kind of abrupt.
Yeah.
But I liked it. Yeah. You know? I like how it ended.
Yeah, I was fine with the ending to end it that way because, I mean, like, it's kind of sad, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the whole life has been hard. Like, now that you say it, you know, if you take into account the effects that has been done to them, life's been hard, and that's how they've always lived, you know, making tough decisions.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And it all kind of ends with Joseph being able to, like, lean on his mom, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big thing. You've seen a lot of literature. You've seen a lot of life in indigenous communities. You know, it's fucking a lot of times when Indian dads go away, they don't come back. You know, they fucking and they disappear, and it's just, you know, your mother. And I mean, on a lot of levels, you know, like your blood quantum is traced through your maternal line because you know you're connected there, and you know, and there's such a emphasis on strong women in these communities. So I think that really added to the ending there.
Personally. Well, just as a side note, I just thought this was kind of interesting. I was trying to find it real fast so I could get it exactly. But you know that where towards the end, the church and that whole scene with the graveyard and stuff, they went to that church. That's on their land. They went to that church and wanted permission. They said no. So they went to the archdiocese who gave them permission and then said, but you are not to go on the cemetery. And they just were like, fuck you. And then, you know, you see it. They film all over that place. So I thought that was kind of cool.
That's pretty rad.
But even now, I mean, look at, you can't go on your land, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucked up.
It is fucked up. Very fucked up. So Blood Quantum, go check it out. It's on Shudder. Let us know what you think.
Go check it out on Shudder. It's fucking... You know, Shudder's still like $5 if you don't have it yet. It's well worth it. There's plenty of good shit on there. Blood Quantum to me, even if you just want a fucking zombie movie that's a little bit different than your run of the mill zombie movie, that'll take that box for you. There's plenty of gore. There's a little bit of humor, and I mean. If you are an Indian, you know, go check it out. I mean, if you're, you know, kind of into the culture or whatever, you can give it a shot. And while you're at it, go watch Smoke Signals.
Yeah.
Don't know where to find it, but watch it.
But we appreciate y'all listening. Make sure you go hit us up on all our social media stuff. If you're watching the video, you see it in the video. You know what I'm saying? Which is awesome. Jim Jam has been working hard on that. We hope you enjoyed this. And thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Appreciate y'all.
And that's all we got, y'all. We out.
Peace.
Y'all take care now.
We have had a doozy of a day.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.